by Emma Lazarus, Give Me Your Tired, Your Poor, should be removed from the Statue of Liberty, that it shouldn't have gone up there to begin with. It wasn't a part of it originally.
Right, right. I mean, these folks represent the worst in us. You know, they represent the worst in America. And again, I cannot emphasize that the path was laid by mainstream acceptable politicians who heard, you know, this birther business, who saw all this, who heard, you know, people, you know, consistently lobbying racist attacks at the president and did nothing and just stood aside. And so, you know, the idea that the party would then be taken over by a much more extreme, a much more vocal sort of white supremacy is not shocking. If you did nothing, you know, if you didn't speak up, you know, during the Obama era, when these, you know, claims of racism, when these charges of racism were being lobbed, if you just stood aside, you're part of the problem. You're part of how we got here. You know, and you don't get off by, you know, after somebody's been killed in Charlottesville, you know, making a statement, you know, about white supremacy at this late hour. After the fruit is already
We have to leave it there. Ta-Nehisi Coates, thanks so much for being with us. That does it for our show. His forthcoming book, We Were 8 Years in Power. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Joe and Abe Talk Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver. His stage show, An Evening with Dan Levinson, is an intimate evening of musical conversation that combines old-time fiddle, Appalachian banjo, stories and song in a storytelling format to tell the story of life in rural Appalachia and life on the road. Again, that's An Evening with Dan Levinson at Kennedy Violins on Saturday, August 26th at 4 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station. KBOO! Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. We got a lot to talk about. These are serious times, and they're getting more serious. This is KVOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187.
You're right. These are serious times. I think in any sort of normal universe, in any time before Donald Trump, I think we could safely say that the president threatening nuclear war would in fact be the highlight or the low light of a given week. But it's not the case here.
No. Amazingly.
He had to one-up himself and do one better. And that is essentially wrap his arms around neo-Nazis in the United States of America.
Well, remember that he has all of his life and before him, his father's life, been essentially racist and essentially sexist and essentially disgusting. And that unfortunately, anger, I think this is really serious issue, anger and rage and alienation out of the working class. I don't like the term middle class because it really doesn't cover it, though it may sometimes mean that people in the working class get middle class incomes. The working class has been messed over, not so much by the left or whatever. It's more about the shifting changes in technology and capitalism itself in an international world, which leaves most working people out in the cold.
Well, I think it's about racism.
Just straight out?
Yeah.
Forget all that other stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Just that?
Well, no. That's an oversimplification.
Duh.
But I think it's at the it gets right down to the root of it. This thing is just has not gone away. There's a new generation of white supremacists in the country who have inherited this mantle from their fathers and from their grandfathers. And I'm using using male nouns intentionally here because you see the pictures of these people in Charlottesville. They're overwhelmingly men. Overwhelmingly men.
Yes.
They are quite literally carrying this torch forward.
Well, also they
never mind that the torches came from Costco. Oh. Little oil-fired tiki torch. Have you seen these pictures?
The Hawaiian tiki torches,
yeah. It kind of takes the edge off your violent mob when they're all carrying torches from Costco.
Well, they don't know how to make Walmart. They don't know how to make real torches.
Yeah, they mobs today. They yeah. just don't
what
do
are you
it the
do?
Way they
what are
used
you
to
do
it.
No, I think in large part, obviously, racism is a key factor. Also, anti-Semitism.
Also,
amazingly,
anti-Semitism,
amazingly harsh anti-Semitism. And I think that it's really important to understand that you're right, that this has been a thing. We have to always remember that the origins of this country were built around slavery. And this is the heartland of slavery. We love Jefferson. We love Madison, but these were all slaveholders.
They were, yeah.
So that the inheritance of a self-righteous notion of the linkage of the American way with racism and sexism and so on is absolutely indisputable. And now we're seeing that come to fruition in the most ugly and vicious way.
So to recap.
Yes.
Last week, a defense intelligence agency, let's be very clear here, an intelligence agency out of the Pentagon, claimed that North Korea had been able to miniaturize a nuclear weapon and put it on top of one of their existing fleet of intercontinental ballistic missiles.
I like the concept of fleet.
Fleet? I don't know. What else do you call an aggregation of missiles? Arsenal? It's arsenal.
Arsenal of death, I think, is the term.
That's a little bit too poetic for this guy. Anyway, this wasn't verified by any other intelligence agencies. I think it's important to remember that. It's also important to remember that this very same intelligence agency raised this same issue in a false alarm several years ago.
Right.
So, be that as it may, the North Korean government may or may not be able to nuke U.S.-held territories in close proximity. As far away as Guam was the estimate. Also, of course, Japan or South Korea are within range of these alleged miniaturized nuclear warheads. So the president, in response, issued some really weird, combative, belligerent, almost biblical language about fire and wrath. And as I said at the outset, in a normal week, this would dominate the news, right? Nuclear war.
But that's not what we're going to talk about?
That's mostly not what we're going to talk about, but I'm happy to if people want to address that.
Because okay.
It's still incredibly significant, despite the events that happened just a few days later. And we're talking, of course, about Charlottesville, Virginia, where in response to a plan to remove a statue of a Confederate leader from the Civil War, a white supremacist mob gathered. They were confronted by counter protesters and violence broke out. Culminated in a white supremacist driving a car into a group of counter protesters, injuring several people and killing one person.
Well, and it's also important to remember that there had been a deal apparently cut with these people by the authorities that they would march at a certain time and they would do a certain set of things. They would enter the square at a certain point. They violated all of that. And the fiery tiki, I don't know, what do you call them, torches, were a part of a truly, truly and deliberately reminiscent of Nazi drama.
Yeah.
And on top of all of that, it's a coming together of every despicable aspect of reactionary sentiment in the United States. You had your pro-slavery, essentially, Confederate crowd. Mm-hmm. You had your anti-Semitic crowd. You had your neocon crowd. You had your out-and-out fascist crowd. And I'm not limiting it to that, but these are the kind of people that showed up. And amazingly, because of the NRA and others, you had people with semi-automatic weapons marching in that crowd carrying those weapons.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because you, just a few minutes ago, talked about the working class. If you look at the accoutrement of these these aspiring young American Nazis, these are middle class people. You look at that; they're clean cut, they're reasonably well dressed, and they're carrying semi-automatic weapons, and they're carrying mass-produced torches from freaking Walmart. Okay, so it's tempting to paint these sorts of people and this movement in terms of disaffected, economically dislocated, poor white folks. That just ain't the case, although I'm sure that there is that element among them. But I saw a whole lot of people on my TV screen who were well-heeled, working and middle-class Americans who can afford this sort of stuff and can afford to go buy themselves a tiki torch for their little fascist rally. So these are not just poor folks.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
No, I know you didn't.
I want to be clear about this. I'm talking about a sensibility rather than a particular class position.
But there is a predilection, I think, among a lot of commentators and a lot of people on the left to paint these neo-fascists as predominantly poor, economically dislocated white people. There is a tendency to paint Donald Trump supporters in those tones as well. And lest we forget, there are a large number of middle-class Americans who supported him and were among those people marching in Charlotte.
Well, since we're lest we forgetting, let's not forget that there was a lot of capitalist interest in Trump as the vital revision away from what they, many of them, perceive as a left-leaning Obama regime.
And let's be very clear here. We just heard Ta-Nehisi Coates on Amy Goodman's show talk about this eloquently, this whole situation eloquently. And there's a point he kept returning to, that this did not happen in a vacuum. Donald Trump is a creature of the right. He doesn't, Coates noted, that he's shocked that people are shocked about this. This is no surprise. We saw this in the birther movement that opposed President Obama. We saw this in the Tea Party movement that sprang up after his election. We saw this in the campaign for Donald Trump for president, and on and on and on.
And I want to add on the Bertha movement. I mean, on the Bertha movement. Remember that this was a movement sponsored by the Koch brothers and others who are very well educated, very wealthy, and very powerful people.
Yes. You know, I don't want to relitigate post-Civil War history here. I don't want to go back over the political divisions that fell out after Reconstruction. I think we can stipulate that most Americans, especially those who listen to this show, know enough about their history to understand all that.
I'm not sure it's true, but I'll let you go.
All right, well, if we need to go there at some point, we can go there.
Okay.
But I think our time would be better spent here talking about the proximate causes of what we saw over the weekend. More importantly, what the hell are we going to do about it? And even more importantly, what does it mean to have an American president who is so obviously in sympathy with fascists in this country that it takes him 3 days to denounce them by name?
Only after his advisors in both of his announcements kept begging him to do something to denounce them.
Here's what he said on Sunday. This is the day after all of this happened. My administration is restoring the sacred bonds of loyalty between this nation and its citizens. But our citizens must also restore the bonds of trust and loyalty between one another. We must love each other, respect each other, and cherish our history and our future together. So important. We have to respect each other. Ideally, we have to love each other. So he's saying, oh, this is awful. This is awful. Oh, you know, but we got to cherish our history together. And we all just need to simmer down a little bit. No, no. The Nazis need to go home. More importantly, the Nazis need to grow old and die. There's no room for fascism in the United States of America. If you are a Nazi, you are unambiguously on the wrong side of history. And I don't have any time for you. And frankly, this republic has no time for you. And if the president is unable to recognize that, then we got no time for him either.
Well, okay.
There's... But this is, no, you're kind of looking at me like, oh, he's flying off the handle. This is not controversial. Fascism is bad, Joe. Nazis are bad.
No, I'm looking at you this
news
way.
Newsflash.
Well, because you're ranting rather than arguing. And I do think you're right in the sense that, yes, fascism is a discontinuity and a misunderstanding of reality and a really bad political set of ideas. What I think there's more to all of this than that. The reason why I still like history in this context is because we got to understand that none of this occurs in a vacuum, as you suggest. But there's another element here that's very important. I've been very critical in the past on this show of the anti-fascist black bloc, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now I'm beginning to think if it hadn't been for them, in fact, Cornel West spoke to this the other day, last night, I think, if it hadn't been for the anti-fascists, Cornel West and others, men of the cloth largely and women of the cloth, would have been mobbed and possibly lynched by this crazy crowd. So suddenly we're seeing the kind of street fights that characterized the struggle in Germany in the 1920s and 30s. And that's really important to consider. Because remember, there is no reason to assume that this fascist movement will simply die.
No, it won't simply
even
die.
Though you want it to die.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, nobody's born hating somebody because of the color of their skin or because of what whatever faith they follow. Nobody's born like this. These are inherited values. These 20 and 30 year olds in their khakis and their polo shirts and their Walmart tiki torches, they learned this from somebody. They learned this from their fathers.
Well, I think I think they also have an enormous romantic attachment to lost causes. The Confederacy.
Be that as it may, they still...
Well, let me finish. The Confederacy, the Nazi movement. A lot of romanticism is involved in this.
They learned to romanticize that. They inherited these values that are so toxic. So really, it's time to stop that chain of inheritance. It's time to break that cycle.
And how do you propose to do this? Because saying they should go away or they should die is not going to do much of anything.
No, I know it's not going to do much of anything. How we do it is we reassert political control in this country. We make it politically unsustainable for someone to be a fascist.
Okay,
if you're a fascist, there's no future in elected office for you in the United States.
And how do we do that?
Well, little by little, we elect the right people to office. We pass the right sorts of laws.
And how do we do that?
Well, it seems fairly self-evident to me.
It's not self-evident to me. I see a series of problems here that have structural elements that are really, really difficult to address. We have definitely a strong right wing within the capitalist ruling class, and it seems bent on maintaining and extending power regardless of the wisdom of that, and they are not kidding.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that they are racists in the fashion that the Charlottesville demonstrators are. I think they're happy to have the allegiance of those racists, but I don't think that right-wing bent among the ruling class, I don't think that's quite the same animal. There's certainly an allegiance there.
I don't know whether or not intellectually or theoretically they are or are not racists. I know that their behavior, that the structure of the way capitalism works and the way it has historically functioned is racist. And I know that it is exploitive of other nations, which is certainly a racist concept. I know that this is a movement which comes out of a long, long tradition of American imperialism, which was racist. What I'm suggesting is it's a systemically, profoundly systemically serious problem that can, to argue, well, we need to all get together and vote, it's not going to happen. It can't happen. You have to, in some manner, address the real root problems. And I don't see moral outrage or a sense of indignity or even a sense of righteousness acting powerfully enough to make this change possible. I'm quite depressed about it.
Really? I see that everywhere I look in response to these events.
Oh, well.
It's here on our radio program.
That's why we get to have these arguments.
Why don't we talk to our listeners? Because they're smarter than we are. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program.
Yeah.
By the way, on KBOO 90.7 FM. Let's go to the phones. Cody, good morning.
Good morning. Look, we'll never be as smart as you guys. Let's get that straight right now.
Okay? Oh, I don't know about that, man.
You guys together are undefeatable. this crazy crowd that Joe was talking about, I heard they came there as a result of what the vice mayor was doing concerning that statue, and then they really reacted when he went into reparations, okay, which is something that's getting close to the eye of what racism is all about in this country. It's really never been about hate. It's always been about resources, okay? One of you guys referred to is, you know, you can't see how, you know, people aren't born hating somebody, but they can be convinced to join if it's to their financial advantage. You have an entire generation of white males who are recycling into these organizations because it's to their financial advantage. Money, again. Making it politically unsustainable for people to be in racist organizations like that. I kind of agree with Joe when he says we have a systemic problem in the infrastructure. An infrastructure that basically gives these people sympathy. They're sympathetic, wink, nod. Kind of like how the police did not act in that area in the first place, or how they would have reacted if that was a bunch of black people. Okay.
Well, that last point is absolutely true. I mean, if this had been an African American crowd, God knows what horrors we would have seen.
Yes, yes. And racism has always been about resources and land. Look at the Oregon Constitution concerning blacks. That was all about keeping blacks away from having land. And this is why African-American descended of slaves. African-American descended of slaves. Okay, I don't like that word people of color because it makes things too amorphous. The Civil Rights Act came about as a result of the African-American, African-American descended of slaves. And part of the reparations was the affirmative action. A good book I encourage people to read is When Affirmative Action Was White by Ira Katznelson, Katznelson. And it basically brings out how a lot of American servicemen coming back from World War II did not get their FHA loans.
Right.
Just because they were black by the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And instead of making these neighborhoods like they did for the white servicemen, they created these ghettos that black people ended up in. Okay, so I mean, there's a lot that black people had to endure in a very African American descended of slaves had to endure in a very clever way, right on up to gentrification to this day. And we need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, quite frankly. We need to really dig deep and start exposing this stuff. So yeah, it's about hate, but it ended up as hate.
No, I think you're
allocation of resources.
If I understand what you're saying, you're emphasizing the structural and historic aspects of this, which I absolutely agree with. Also, I think the idea of reparations is absolutely morally, though politically difficult, absolutely morally correct. And until there is somehow, and I have to say somehow because I don't know how it comes about, a real conscious understanding of the situation, of the history of the United States, and of the horrible treatment which Native Americans and African Americans and so on were exposed to. Until there is that, and a real sense of not only guilt, but a desire to make reparation, it's not going to go away. We can only control the problem. And I really want to thank you for calling in, man.
Yeah, I think we'll give some others a chance. Well, if you want to wrap it up, go ahead. Wrap it up quickly.
Oh, we lost him. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. You can also write to us on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe or over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's go to Lynn. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to comment on Abe's comment that these people were the folks, the fellows in the rally got all their hatred from their parents, and I don't think so. I saw the parents of one guy who said, "We did not raise him this way.
Yeah, you're
this
right.
Is not who he was to be, and he is not coming home until he changes his ways." And I think it's kind of, it does remind me a little bit of the 30s, and this is a sort of in Germany, this sort of wave of a culty kind of thing, rather than just how all these folks were raised.
Then why has it persisted over so many generations? That's what I'm trying to understand. How, unless...
Well, there is, but not with that family, obviously.
No, not with
you
that family.
I mean, there are people that it's persistent with because it feels safe to them.
You're right. You're right that I shouldn't paint so broadly. There are exceptions, of course, obviously. And you're right.
That's all I wanted to
That young man's parents publicly denounced him and cut him off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
there's what's that Twitter site that's out now that's... name and shame all the folks that were there.
I think actually that's not a bad idea. I think anonymity.
I think it's a great idea.
I think anonymity, which is absolutely symbolized by the hoods worn by the Klan, an indication of their own sense of shame. I think that's really, really an important thing. I don't think people who act in a violent and horrible way and violate every norm of a rational, fair-minded society should be anonymous. I don't think they have the right to be anonymous. I think if you're going to be in a crowd and you're going to act violent, you need to be exposed.
Well, and they certainly, their little uniform wasn't very concealing. So
no, and they chose.
You know, and tiki torches, the tiki torches people also put out, I don't know if it was a tweet or just a piece saying that they denounced having their torches used in such a way.
Well, yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, interesting that the manufacturer of tiki torches is quicker to denounce fascism than the President of the United States.
Very much, isn't it? Yes. Well, you know, he can't disturb his base.
No. Thank you.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, and on to other people, and thanks for your show.
Thank you very much for the call.
She's right. Not every young fascist learned to be a fascist from his or her parents, but they learned it from someplace.
Well,
nobody's born a fascist.
See, I'm still arguing for the fundamental reality of a society which is not just racist, but moreover cuts off working people from access to success. And the vast shift in technology and trade and so on is largely what is making this movement so powerful today. And how powerful it is more about their demonstrable, horrible behavior than it is in their numbers. But we cannot assume that their numbers are tiny by the amount of people that show up. We don't know what lies in the hearts of these men.
Let's go to the phones. Jeremy, good morning.
Yeah, I realize this is mildly off topic, so stop me if you have to.
Mildly? Go ahead, man.
Sorry, I'm trying to get you off speaker here. Hello?
Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I can't get you off speaker. I have a new phone. Something that's always occurred to me about Trump and that it's not, never had enough discussion is he was apparently a very a talented actor. In college, that was really where he had a lot of passion and apparently some skill. I believe he never thought he had any chance of becoming president. And he, of course, he didn't win. I mean, he stole the election was stolen and voter suppression and all. he doesn't particularly want, didn't particularly want to win, and has no clarity about actually wanting to stay in office. I happen to think Pence is quite probably much worse and much more dangerous because he's, you know, less crazy and he's going to be more effective. So I kind of don't see him lasting very much farther, and he will go away with his brand and his, you know, illegal Russian mafioso pumped up money empire improved. And what we've got is some sort of, you know, especially the religious fascistic elements that I think, you know, Pence will lead even better is possibly more dangerous. I mean, you know, he went, Hillary Clinton was at Jared Kushner's wedding. The families are close, and I think he didn't mind, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. Anyway, the one other point I wanted to make more specifically on your topic was that a very large percentage of Nazi Party members were very recently communists. And in the absence of any coherent way to express their dissatisfactions in a left-wing manner, it was very easy for them to move very far right very quickly. I don't think anything that's happening here, but it just sort of speaks to the incoherence and malleability of miserable, angry, poor people.
I appreciate your comment. I'm going to let you go. I want to get other people on.
Sure.
But I do want to make one quick comment, which I think is very important to understand, which is that there has never been a real effective analysis at the popular level of what's going on in the society. If you watch what most people watch, the major networks, if you watch Fox News, even more so, what you're seeing is proto-fascist disguise. Every advertisement, every presentation, everything on them is about having stuff and about a notion of comparative wealth. It is not at all about the collective health and happiness of the people. There's no real discussion, for example, of a national health care system. There's no real discussion, for example, of what foreign policy ought to be. It simply is not there. And when it's not there, in the absence of that in the popular culture, people become simply adrift. And where they look, where they turn, has to do with where they feel pain, where they feel aggrieved. And that's a lot of what fascism is always about and always has been about. And indeed, the middle, the bourgeoisie, let's use that term, in Germany, easily after being victimized horribly at the end of World War I and having nothing to turn to except two totalitarian models, turned to the one that made the most glorious sense in a nationalist situation. Now, that's not anything like the U.S. The aggrievedness is real here, but it's much more minor in actuality. The tensions that come out of the situation, and this is where Abe and I sometimes disagree, really have historic roots, and they really are profound, and they really are hard to combat.
No, I don't. No, please don't misunderstand me. I don't disagree with you that all these things have historic roots. What I didn't want to do today is spend a lot of time going over those historic roots. Because I think most of our listeners are familiar with those.
All right.
And we've talked about them many times on the show. You also just said we haven't had a conversation about what healthcare ought to be like or what foreign policy ought to be like. I would submit that we're having that conversation and have been now for several months, if not years. At least since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, and especially in recent months now that the Trump administration is trying to undo it, and the Republicans in Congress have been trying to undo it. We have been having that conversation.
We're also having a conversation in the ruling class about how to manage this society, since they do manage it.
Of course. I'm not denying that at all. But to say that this dialogue is not happening, I think that's to miss the fact that it is. But
well,
anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned a couple other things. Now, you said it's hard to know what's in the hearts of these men who are outing themselves as Nazis. I think we can know, to a certain extent, what's in their head and what's in their hearts. There were two video clips I saw over the weekend that honestly gave me the chills. And that's where of these mobs in Charlottesville. And they were chanting two different things. The first one was blood and soil.
Which is a Nazi chant.
And to hear that chanted in the 21st century in the United States of America out in the open was a chilling thing to behold. And the second thing, they were chanting, "We will not be replaced. We will not be replaced."
Well, and the third thing they were chanting was an anti-Semitic slogan.
Which was?
I can't remember the word.
Okay.
But I'm sure of it. It was absolutely, those were the things that were being chanted.
But you're wondering what's in their hearts. Well, if they're chanting, "We will not be replaced," that tells me that these are a bunch of white dudes clinging to the last vestiges of their privilege in the knowledge that they will soon be in the minority in this country.
Well, I think to the degree that they're rational, you're correct.
Yeah.
I say to the degree that they're rational. Remember that this is crowd psychology. This is a classic example of that. And also remember that the internet, which many of us like and some of us don't so much, is a wonderful way to communicate and gather crowds for almost anything.
Yeah, well, why are you out there chanting, "We will not be replaced," unless you're worried that you will be? And the only reason you're worried that you would be worried about that is if A, you're a racist, and B, you're afraid of the consequences of your past racism and that of your ancestors. Otherwise, it's not that big a deal to confront the loss of majority status for white dudes.
Well, I can't speak to the mindset of the fear about persons of color. It's just not something I exactly understand.
Yeah, but we're talking about white people right now.
Yeah, but I do understand that, in fact, there is a search among victims or people who perceive themselves as victims for an immediate source to blame. And it is, given our history, really, really easy to demonize persons of color or women or Jews or whomever. And that is what's happening. And that is not being, what I was earlier trying to refer to is, I don't believe that the media in this country, I don't know whether they don't understand or don't give a damn or they're about selling soap or whatever, they are not in any way actually confronting the real news. I don't agree with the Trumpian false and fake news thing, but I definitely think they don't embrace things. By the way, last night I saw the news show of Vice News, mm-hmm, with brilliant coverage in the midst of all of this horror in Virginia, in Charlottesville. And the young woman who they chose to do the reporting was brilliant. She was she presented herself as an average white woman. And she got inside with her camera person. She got inside vans with these people. She had talks in hotel rooms with these people. She got them to show their weapons. She was absolutely, absolutely careful and honest and straightforward. And they responded with their prideful foolishness. And it was chilling. And it was necessary. And anybody who thinks this is an en passant, something that's going to pass away, had better think again.
All right. Let's go to the phones, and we'll take care of a little business.
Okay.
All right. Karen is next. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to mention, if you haven't seen it, it's an article by Carol Anderson, who's the author of White Rage and a professor of African American Studies at Emory University. She said that, or she, in her article, she says that white supremacy is like a drug. She says none of this makes sense, that is the violence of white supremacists and Trump's delayed response to it, unless, that is, we come to grips with the reality that we are seeing the effects of far too many Americans strung out on the most pervasive, devastating, reality-warping drug to ever hit the United States, white supremacy. It's in the article's in The Guardian, August 13, 2017, and it goes some distance, I thought, toward explaining the psychological potency of white supremacy, which is I've never really understood that. Why does it grab people and sink in so deeply? It gives them a high. And I was listening to your description of the violence earlier and the mob psychology, Joe, and I thought, yeah, there is a high that comes out of that that I'm always so repelled and find it so abhorrent. I didn't get that, and I think she's really put her finger on a dimension of this issue that we don't usually ever think about. And so I just wanted to share that with you and add that to the conversation.
And I want to thank you. There are many, by the way, many excellent articles, many excellent thoughtful pieces by all kinds of people consequent to this Charlottesville horror and previous to it. It was almost...
And I was listening to your description.
Oh, I'm sorry. Something happened there.
Oh, no.
Okay. However, I think it is absolutely incumbent on all of us to read as much as we can and to think as much as we can about all this. It does have historic dimensions. It is this particular phenomenon. When you see a confluence of revengist Confederate reactionaries, neo-Nazis, neo-cons, and absolute anti-Semites, all of these in a fascist context, ready to do battle in the fields of darkness. You know, there's no question about what's going on. And I think it's really, really important to understand it and to be quite concerned about it. And it's, I have to say, for me, it's making me rethink the importance of the radical anti-fascist movement, which I've been very critical about in Portland, and I'm thinking, as I said earlier, if it hadn't been for the intervention of the anti-fascist groups, Cornel West and others might have been lynched. And that's real.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Professor Michael Eric Dyson unpacks the invisible knapsack of white privilege. At 10, Eric Ascada, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, D. May Roberts talks to best-selling author Jamie Ford about his newest novel, Love and Other Consolation Prizes. And at 11:30, Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews artists Drew Carson and Kate Simmons about their projects, Combat Paper and Slow Cooked. All that and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station. And we got a little extra here. There is going to be a rally this Friday in solidarity with the anti-fascists in Charlottesville. Let me back up. When I say anti-fascist, I don't necessarily refer to the black-clad anti-fascist group that we sometimes think of.
Well,
I'm talking about those people who opposed the Nazis.
And include the anti-fascists.
And include the anti-fascists, yeah.
Which was my point.
Right. Okay. So this is this Friday, August the 18th, 5:30 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain on the waterfront in downtown Portland. This is put together by Portland's Resistance. That's a group who's been a friend of this show. Greg McKelvey is their leader. He was on several months ago.
Yeah, we have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's taking place this Friday, 5:30 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain. This is the Eclipse Hate Rally in solidarity with Charlottesville.
Oh, clever use of language, that.
Indeed. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. And while I find history to be very important and probably we need to know about it, I'd like to speak about the way forward. And Joe, I think maybe you put your finger on it when you mentioned norms of behavior. And I think the lesson of the 1960s and the water hoses and some of the Southern behavior was that it violated basic norms of behavior, and Americans were not willing to put up with that, and that enabled the civil rights bills and Voting Rights Act to go through. And I think that norms of behavior is a cultural thing, and I think we have to look for commonality here in what are our basic norms that shouldn't be violated.
Well, I think there's nothing to disagree with on that. I do think, I will always believe, and I think I have plenty of evidence to support it, that the ruling class in America is not particularly fascist. What it is it's about itself and its interests. It's willing to impose a fascist state if that's what it takes for them to continue on their path. They are ruthless, they are unreasonable, and they are very dangerous. And unfortunately, as we're seeing, there is a time in our history where that ruthlessness, that absolute disinterest in fairness or justice or opportunity even, has crosses a path with other kinds of horrors, biases, prejudices, racism, all kinds of stuff, sexism. And by the way, the thing that really freaks me out, just personally, is that one of the chant that Abe didn't mention but is very important was an anti-Semitic chant. And during the interview on Vice, the Vice News show, it was very clear that the leadership of that group absolutely perceives a dubiousness in Trump in that, and this is their kind of description, he gave his daughter to a Jew. We need to understand that. In a way, it's ironic because many of us are critical of the policies of Israel, not of Israel itself, but of the policies of the current Israeli government. And many of us are aware of the anti-Semitism that produced Israel to begin with. This is a fundamental problem, and there needs to be a fundamental understanding of the linkages here, because this is what Nazism in this country is all about. Linking racism of a particular kind with anti-Semitism, with sexism, with all kinds of biases and hatreds that have lingered and existed in our society for so long. By the way, anti-Semitism in this country is a great tradition. And I really want to point out that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that his government, and that many people prior to the discovery of the Holocaust were fundamentally kind of gentlemanly anti-Semites. It's really important to realize that.
I think what you talked about in those isms was always to divide people. And I think the one way to bring people together in a society where we all come, and as many times have been noted, we're an immigrant society. In other words, if you trace your roots back, people come from all over the world. We don't look alike. We don't all speak alike. So I think we have to look for the commonality. And the commonality that I see in America, and my wife, who's from another country, noted this right away, is a fundamental decency. And a fundamental decency that doesn't exist in a lot of other countries around the world, and I mean on an interpersonal level. And I think to the extent that we emphasize a common culture, and this is a problem, I think, with multiculturalism. And one of the chants you mentioned was about we will not be replaced. Yes, that is a racist. A lot of the people there were racist. But I think a lot of people are disturbed by the culture changes. And when you see people who look differently from you, it's a scary thing. And they speak differently from you, and you think you're being replaced, and people don't want to be replaced.
Well, I think you're talking to a reality of deep, fundamentally racist fear, which has always been a useful tool of those who would maintain a system which is not democratic and which is authoritarian fundamentally and which favors a privileged class. In this country, it happens to be a white population.
Well, that's all true, but the way we got over that during the 1960s was a sense of decency. I mean, people who...
Well, I think, let me be clear. I agree with the idea that there needs to be a sense of decency. I also think, though, that we didn't exactly get over it. What we did was cover it up and legally make it intolerable. That did not solve the fundamental problems of the ordinary person in their relations with persons of color and persons who have different religions or have no religions. We are seeing this. And when we talk about Trump, when he attacks Islam, Bill Maher, in fact, a liberal lefty kind of guy. When they attack religion, and when they attack specifically the Islamic religion and group all followers of Islam with some kind of apocalyptic attempt to take over the world, not regarding where these countries and these people are now, as opposed to some historic events around 700, this is very dangerous, and it's very stupid, and it's very short-sighted. And it leads inevitably into a situation where intolerance for one group leads inevitably to an intolerance for another group. And it's all about, fundamentally, a sense of injustice coming out of where a person comes from, not who they are, not what they believe, not where they want to go, not what their aspirations or interests are. And this is very, very scary, and it's not really addressed. And again, I want to emphasize the ugly role of ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox News, and so on in all of this. There's good media there. There's bad media there. When you look at local TV, which, by the way, outfits like Sinclair are taking over all the time these days, when you look at these things, you realize that it's not benign. That when they talk, when they always end with a happy story, when they talk about murders, if it bleeds, it leads, when they do all of this stuff rather than analysis and rather than real news, they are essentially filling in for what needs to be done, filling in a way that just cuts off the reality of the situation. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call, man.
Thank you.
All right. Jane is next.
Hi. I just wanted to say that in Portland, specifically, so I don't know about Virginia, but we do have people who are recruited into the Aryan Nation in prison in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a clash of all of everything going on. There's something for everyone in my neighborhood. And I just feel like it's hard because I do know so many stories that I can't go into them. But people would be surprised that, to a certain extent, there's pieces. I just wanted to say, it's like if there was a pie chart, there's a lot of pieces of the pie chart that are missing. And I think they explain that this is a little like racism .30, but it ain't nothing new. It's nothing new, but now it's just, as you stated before, it's fueled by the internet and some of the globalization that, and across the pond, you can see even in Japan, they do struggle this issue in Okinawa, and because Okinawans are not Japanese, and they struggle with Koreans. The globalization thing is a component as well, but I just wanted to say that, you know, I have discussed with family members, should they segregate the prisons so that people don't get joined into the Aryan Nation? Or, you know, what do you do? I know I had a family member, an older family member who was stationed in Germany, before the collapse of the Soviet Union. And I don't know what it's like there now because of current events. But back in those days, everybody was really, like, not racist. And basically, it's against the law. They're much more strict. They don't have this. They didn't have this free speech stuff, etc. And I just wanted to say that in Portland, there definitely is a clash of everything colliding together. And there's been some systemic problems with classism in Portland that have never been addressed because lower class Portland, what's called blue collar, has just been, and you could see it with the baseball stadium that was going to go up, just so severely trashed on historically, that I do feel that the internet and things like the prison system have just fueled that. But seeing the people from Virginia who've actually graduated from that school just shows the other aspects of this within our society. And then, you know, I mean, I wish I could just say that. And then also, it's always hard for me to say that. It's hard to even speak anymore because people aren't listening to each other. And then, like, I can't go into everything or all of my talking points because literally I'm at 3 minutes and I would say much more. So people will just take whatever I said and maybe tear it apart instead of saying that's interesting, I'll consider it.
Well, I'm going to hurry you along if I may, but I do think that it's really important to realize that Portland is a white city. I do think that its history is replete with racism, and I do think that it is also replete with classism. When we are building high-rise apartments, when we are essentially using money to create housing that will serve the middle and upper classes without being aware of or dealing with the needs of people whose incomes are lower, when we are angry because we have street people wandering our streets, people stealing stuff, people making a mess, etc., and not thinking about how that comes about and why it exists and why it's growing, we are committing a very foolish error. We need to understand the fundamental class aspects of the situation in the city and the fundamental racist aspects of it. And I wanted to thank you for your call. Okay.
All right. Let's try and get one more in. Craig, you're next.
Craig,
are you there?
Bring into the discussion some psychology.
Hey, Craig, I'm sorry. We cut to you in the middle of your sentence. Can you back up a little bit and start again, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for this. I wanted to bring in some psychology, and in particular, there was a book that was written in 1933 in Germany by a German doctor, William Reich. And it's called The Mass Psychology of Fascism. And it is a very insightful, brilliant book that I believe was banned in this country at one point. I'm not sure why. But I think that understanding and framing the conversation of what's going on today in terms of perhaps the bigger issues, like poverty is the parent of revolution and crime, as Aristotle said 2,400 years ago, and that there is enough for every man's need, but not for every man's greed, as Gandhi said. And it seems that what we're really heading for is intergenerational civil war, because it's intergenerational that is being undermined in spades by our extreme overconsumption and disregard for nature as the master.
Well, I think you're making some interesting points. By the way, when you talk about Wilhelm Reich and his book, it is very important, a very good book. He became discredited because of his theory around the notion of the orgone. And essentially, he was banned by the health authorities in this country. His work on the mass psychology of fascism still stands as a very important analysis. And yeah. I'm glad you brought it up.
Thank you. I agree. I'm not saying that everything, you know, someone does is
Well, we lost him. We're going to have to move on.
Sorry about that. We dropped a couple of people today. Apologies. I'm not sure why that happened, but we'll endeavor
the
to
the failure of technology in the age of the future.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show.
Pretty much. I think that this is going to have to be the start of a very serious conversation. I intend to be at the, and I think this is really important, I intend to be at the demonstration on Saturday, and I think it's something that all of us should go to. I think that there should be a massive, massive appearance. You know, I was disappointed there weren't the big marches and big protests that there were in so many other cities in the last few days. I'm really glad this is going to be held 5:30 p.m. at the fountain at the waterfront on Saturday. I'm going to be there. I hope you can be there too, Abe.
I'm going to be out of town.
You're going to be out of town.
So you're going to have to represent the show.
I will represent the show. I will represent me. And I will expect to see many, many people. And I also want to urge everyone to still heed the most important part of what we do when we demonstrate, which is to be nonviolent. I still believe, and I will always believe, that nonviolence is a key factor in any struggle that's going to be successful and moral in the United States.
Yeah, these are strange times, man. These are strange times. Like we said at the outset of the show, in a normal universe, we'd be talking about the looming threat of nuclear war. But yeah, instead, but we're talking about...
It's looming.
It's looming. So thanks, everybody, for your contributions, and we will be back at you next week.
It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8:59, and coming up next is Alternative Radio.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo, and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/FuzzyBoo.
Books and records! Books and records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station, KBOO. Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's